Okay, Shavua Tov, everyone. So we're continuing in the sugya of Efshar Velo Mechaven. So just review that according to Abaye, Efshar Velo Mechaven, Lo Efshar Velo Mechaven, that Lo Efshar according to Abaye in Rav Yehuda is Mutter. And now we're up to Toshma. So we're on Daf Chav Vav Amar Aleph. And we're going to learn a sugya now about Egla Rufa. I think I gave a little bit of an overview at the end of the shiur on Thursday. Right? The pasuk says in Dvarim Chav Aleph, V'chol ziknei ha'ir ha'hi ha'krovim el ha'cholol. In other words, they find the cholol, which is a dead body, and they make a medida, a measurement to the nearest city. The ziknei ha'ir of that closest city have to go down to what's called the Nachal Eson, and there they do an arifa of the arufa. And that was the last thing that we discussed in Yitz Hashem on Thursday. So now we're up to Toshma. So let's count up from the bottom of Chavavam and Aleph, three lines up, 1, 2, 3, right after Egla Rufa, and we have Toshma. Okay. Now, in the parish of Egla Rufa, the Torah says, V'lokhu ziknei ha'ir ha'hi, eglas bokar, ashalo ubad ba. Asher lo mashcha bi'ol. Now, what does lo ubad ba mean? It means that there was no work ever done with this egel. Now, the Gemara Sota tells us that there are two ways in which the egel becomes possible for egla rufa. One is what's called mashcha ba'ol, which means that the egel is doing malacha, and the other way is ola aleha ol, that something climbs on top of the egel, and the egel carries that something. So we'll talk about ola aleha ol in just a few minutes, but first we'll focus on mashcha ba'ol. The pasuk says, "Asher lo mashcha ba'ol." Now, mashcha ba'ol, as we said before, means malacha, that the animal is doing work. Let's say the classic case of an animal doing work is called disha, where the animal is threshing the ground, and it's carrying some sort of kli disha. So it's schlepping along these threshing utensils. And the case is the following: Hichnisa liravka or lirvaka. Now, again, there are different ways of vocalizing that word, and that's going to be a machlokas between Rashi and Rabbeinu Chananel. In other words, is resh beis kuf he a noun, a shem davar, known in Hebrew as a tzemed? Tzemed means when they tie together various animals in a group so that the animals work in tandem to carry and drag something heavy. Or is lirvaka not a noun but a verb? Okay, we'll see that in Rabbeinu Chananel pretty soon. But in any event, whatever he did was he attached the animal to this thing called a tzemed bakar, and dasha, and the animal went ahead and did disha. Now, the question is, did the owner of the animal intend to use this animal, this calf, as a work animal? Because if he did, then when a person works with this this eglas bakar, then that's considered mashcha bi'ol, and it becomes psula for an egla rufa. It can no longer qualify for the egla rufa. But in this case of hichniso l'ravka or l'rvaka, he only intended to tie the animals together. But vidasha, the animal on its own, contributed to the disha, to the plowing of the ground. And in such a case, kshera, the egla spaka remains qualified. Why? Because this is not considered a malacha poseles, because he had no intention to use the animal in that way. So that's called lo niskaven. Now, if it's lo niskaven, then everybody agrees that that's not considered as if he worked the animal. In order for the animal to be psula, to be disqualified, it's got to be yiskaven. He has to be yiskaven to do the malacha with the animal, to use the malacha, the animal for malacha. Now you know that in the 39 malachas, one of them is called harisha, and harisha means plowing. Now it's a little bit odd because plowing is done by the animal. I mean, why am I chayev in Melechah Shabbos for the Melech of Harisha? I didn't do the Harisha, the animal did the Harisha. But the answer is that if I work the animal, then it's considered as if I did the Harisha. So the animal is just an extension of me. I'm just using this as a mashal, because in a similar way, in regard to the Melecha that passels an Egla for Egla Rufa, if you had Kavana that the animal should work for you, and you tied it up together with the other animals, you used to have four in a tzemet bakar, and they worked together. So if you take a look at Rashi, Divrei HaMashkil Hichnisa, Rashi says Shekoshram, this two lines up before the end of the page, Arba Paros Biyachad. So they connect four cows together in something called a Ravka, or a Kufla, I guess in French. And vidasha. What do you say? It's called a yoke?
A yoke.
Yeah. Okay, we'll call it a yoke. Kshera. Rashi says, Shalom niskavin lekach velav avodahi. Now, what does it mean, lav avoda? I mean, in reality, the animal did the threshing. But that's not considered the avoda that the person, because again, the pasuk says, Asher lo yu'ubad ba. Yu'ubad means that he is activating the animal. He's not considered activating the animal in a case where the animal did the work on its own without his kavana, the human intention. And in the absence of that element of human intention, the animal remains kshera, and it's not considered asher ubad ba.
Why isn't it?
I don't know. I'm not sure how the laws of Sikresha operate here in this case.
Why else would you tie them together with Nisa?
Right, I'm not sure. That we'll have to figure that out. But let me just present to you Rabbeinu Chananel. Rabbeinu Chananel has another interpretation of this Gemara. And he says that you don't read it Revaka. Revaka is a noun, as Rashi does, which we call the yoke, if you will. But rather, Rabbeinu Chananel says lirivka. Lirivka is a verb. Hainu lefatma. What does it mean? So here's where Rabbeinu David, I think I mentioned to you in the past that one of the Ramban's great Talmidim was Rabbeinu David, and he elaborates on Rabbeinu Chananel. Number one, he's going to tell us what does it mean lirivka in Rabbeinu Chananel, and number two, he's going to tell us why Rabbeinu Chananel rejects Rashi. And this is all in a few words in Rabbeinu David. And he says the following. Lirivka means lefatma, which means that there's fodder, there's animal food, and by controlling the animal and putting the yoke on, he's able to guide the animal to eat that which the animal has to eat. And Rabbeinu David says that the reason why Rabbeinu Chananel is inhibited, he's hesitant to interpret like Rashi, he says, because what does this mean, hichnisa Liravka, according to Rashi, meaning he tied it together with the other tzemid baka. Rashi doesn't give you a clue as to why he would do such a thing. And the Brisa says that the animal still remains qualified as an egla rufa because there was no kavana. What do you mean there was no kavana? So why did he tie it together? So I don't have an answer to that question, but I can just tell you Rabbeinu Chananel offers another answer, that the word is not lirvaka, but rather liravka. Liravka means not a noun, but lirivka. So rivaka again is a noun, and lirivka means to do this rivka. What is this rivka? So that's where Rabbeinu Chananel is a little bit unclear. He says lefatma. Lefatma means to fatten it up, meaning to have it eat. And Rabbi Nidavid expands and he says, Kevin Shech Nisa Lefatma, Vadei Shelo Rotza Shetadush. So again, I'm not sure, I'm not a farmer, but I can't tell you, but apparently there are two different reasons why a person would take a cow and attach it to a yoke. One is in order to guide it so that it eats, and the other is for threshing purposes. And the bottom line here is that the Brisa is telling us in the Reisha that if it's lerivka, lerivka means for the purpose of feeding it, that's not called kavana shetadush. It's not a kavana for the sake of disha, in other words, for the animal to do this work. Steve, do you have the English translation? Mm-hmm. How does he translate in the English? I'm just curious, lerivka, or does he have...
He hitched it to a team.
Hitched it to a team. Yeah. Okay, that's good. I like that. He hitched it to a team. But he doesn't tell you why he hitched it to a team, does he?
Well, but doesn't the next phrase where they talk about it suffering from its...
Well, order, that's the safer. That's the case, right, where it's going to be possible. I was just curious, in the ratio when we say there was no kavana, remember we saw Rashi two lines up from the bottom.
They're making the assumption that he only did it to suckle from the mother. And not to thrash. And the safer is to do both.
Oh, I see. That's cool. That would justify Rashi against Rabbeinu Chananel. Okay, excellent. Thank you, Steve. So when Rashi says Hishlon is kaving lakach, what Rashi means is Shalon is kaving ledisha ella le pito, or latino. What was it called? Lahanik. Correct? Ah, I see. Okay, that's good. So what you have to do is you have to take the seifa of this price and you have to put it into the ratio. So what the seifa is going to tell you is that he had a double intention. And the ratio is talking about he was singularly focused on the tinok, on the tinok. How does he translate disha, by the way? Does he use the word threshing?
Thresh.
Yeah. Oh, that he does. Okay. Because the word disha, by the way, could mean many different things. But here it means threshing. Okay, shkar. Now we're doing a lot better. So now he quotes the Chazon Ish here. And he says the following. Bisota mevur shaha egla eina nifselis elen ke mashcha be'ol. And Anido Bibraisa, Odos Hadisha, who rak kasher hunchu olel klei disha. In other words, it's not just enough that he hitches, that was the word we used, he hitches the animal to the yoke, but it's more than that. He also attaches to this yoke klei disha, because otherwise it's not called mashcha biol. Now he has another statement, and he says, "Oshenema shemeshicha lodush netsheves kimeshicha be'ol." Or alternatively, he says that even if he hasn't yet attached these kledisha to the animal, but nevertheless, since his ultimate goal is that the animal should do the disha, and that's going to be in the next case in the brisa, that's also enough to be considered mashcha be'ol. So the Chazon Ish vacillates back and forth on this issue. And we'll soon see that he quotes a Mishnah in Parah as to whether or not he has to attach the kledisha to this animal in order for it to be considered kavana ladush and a psul of asher lo ola aleha ol. Okay, that's going to be enough for us now. I'm sure there's a lot more to this sugya, but I have a goal for today, and I apologize I came a little late, but I hope that we can achieve that goal. So we'll move ahead now for the time being. Let's read the seifa of this braisa. Bishvil shetinak v'todush. Here in the seifa, he has a double intention. Not only does he wish, which is true in the Reish as well, that the animal should eat or should not suckle from its mother, but also he has in mind that it should join its mother with Disha. So here in this case, he does have a kavana of Asher Ola Aleha Ol. And that's going to apostle the animal and disqualify it as an Egla Rufa. So this is a very interesting Mishnah in Masechta Para and a Braisa there, but what does it have to do with our sugya of Abayi? So Gemara says, V'ahacha delo efshar. So in other words, regardless of the Disha, and again the distinction between the Reish and the Sefer as to his intention, whether he wants Disha or he doesn't want Disha, but leave that on the side, he has another reason, another motivation for hitching the cow to the Ravka, and that is Kidei Shetinok. So that makes it into Lo Efshar. I mean, once you have to bring something somewhere, or you have to carry yourself somewhere for whatever purpose you're doing, now at this point, if at the same time you want to benefit, right, but that's called Lo Efshar V'Kamachavi, which according to Abaye means that it's not considered as if you went there. What do I mean by went there? So let me review and remind you of what we discussed when we first started this sugya, which was almost a week ago, and we came to the conclusion that with regard to Yisuri Hanah, you have to seek out the Yisuri Hanah. So by going in that direction, we say that you are seeking out the Yisuri Hanah, and therefore you're chayav for violating Yisuri Hanah. Comes along Abaye and he says, wait a minute, I can't say that he was going there for the purpose of seeking out the Hana if he had no other option to get to where he has to go. In other words, if he has to pass the Avodah Zarah where they're burning the incense in order to get to his destination, that's not considered a Maisa of Halicha L'Shem Hana, that he is walking from place X to place Y when he has to pass place Y in order to get to place Z. That's not considered a halicha of taking the hanah. Here too, the question is, when he hitches the animal to this tzemed bakar, and he has to do so for the purpose of feeding the animal, do we say that it's as if his action was also an action of working the animal, namely Disha in this case, because he wants to have that side benefit as well? So again, once you justify the Maisa for a purpose that's absolutely permissible, that's called Lo Efshar, if at the same time he's going to benefit from something. And here, Abai goes very far, and he says that according to Rabbi Yehuda, where Kavana, Miskavin, and Lo Miskavin is not an element into the equation, Rabbi Yehuda never differentiated between the two, all the weight is going to be placed on Efshar V'Lo Efshar. Is there a Halicha? Is that halicha considered a maisa to be mahana, to be mishana, or is it not? And Rabbi Yehuda holds it's Lo Efshar. You had to go there anyway. That halicha is not considered a maisa hamahana. Same thing here. The action of hitching the animal, is that considered that you're working the animal when it does its disha? And the answer is, if you had to hitch the animal for another reason, that's called Lo Efshar. So there's no maisa here in which he works the animal. The disha is not considered his disha. Now, Asher, you asked me about Psik Reisha. I don't think that according to Abaye, Psik Reisha is relevant here. Because again, Abaye is building on Rabbi Yehuda. And Rabbi Yehuda says that even Lo Miskavin is Kemiskavin. But the answer is that there's a new principle here called Lo Efshar, which according to Abaye and Rabbi Yehuda's frame of reference means that it's not considered your action. And if it's not considered your action, then the animal worked on its own. And right now, the Gemara understands, the Gemara is going to change this in a minute, that when it says Asher lo ubad ba, that when the Torah describes this Egla As again, I'll read the pasuk. V'lochu zikne ha'ir ahi eglas bakasher lo ubad ba. The Gemara's understanding lo ubad be means that you activate the animal. You do a maisa to get the animal to work. And that's considered that you pasul the animal. That's considered mashcha bi'ol, because you as the human being, what the animal does on its own initiative, on its own volition, that's not related to you. That's not called ubaiba. Ubaiba means you, the person, are working the animal. I'll give you an example. Let's say, there's a kinyan called Meshicha. So the Gemara in Bava Metzi establishes that if you take a stick and you hit the animal in the back and you cause the animal to move, that itself is called Mashiach. The Gemara even goes as far as to say Kori Lavi Ona, that even if you call the animal, the animal moves. But again, the whole sugya there is dealing with the question of whether the human element is considered responsible for the action of the animal, or is the animal walking on its own. And getting back to, again, what I mentioned before, Harisha, this is the whole issue of machinery. Right, today in farming, we have technology, and you press a button, and as a result of electricity, this machine is able to work. You have tractors and all sorts of things. So imagine you have a tractor that digs into the ground. I guess there's a more sophisticated word for it, which I'm not thinking of right now.
Tills the soil.
Yeah, but I think you can describe the actual utensil as something that digs holes. Okay, we'll look it up on Google. In any event, this is the whole issue. The Chazon Ish got very involved in this, whether or not working the field through machinery, through automated machines, where that's considered the human action. Does anybody know how that's nogea to Pesach?
Matzah.
Yeah, exactly. The baking of matzahs. Because the question is, you need lishma and matzah. So back in the day, a person took the isa, the dough, and he put it into the oven. Today we have machines that do it for us. So is that considered the human action? And here also, we need a human action, asher ubad ba. Because right now the Gemara thinks it's not enough if the animal works. That doesn't disqualify the animal. You have to work the animal. And here what we're saying is that your action was done below Efshar, which according to Abayit means that this is not considered an action for the purpose of Disha, even though again you get benefit from the Disha. You're interested in the Disha. And if you would ask me why I did this, the answer is because I want the animal to work, but it doesn't matter. It's a low Efshar situation. I can always take a tramp, I can take a hitch here and say that since the animal has to be brought there for the purpose of Yanika, that's not considered as if I brought it there for the purpose of Yanika. Even though, again, if you ask me why did I bring it there, I give you two answers, and they're both correct. Uketani psula. So this becomes a question on Abaye. So we're almost ready to turn the page. Not yet ready. And the Gemara answers, Shani Hosa. The Gemara says we're misinterpreting the pasuk. Dechsiv asher, again it says v'lochu zikne ha'ir ha'i eglas bakar asher lo ubad ba. Now ubad ba is not the same as lo avad ba. Lo avad ba means the human element is actively causing the animal to do the work. Oh no! The Torah doesn't go out of its way to do that. The Torah says lo ubad ba. Ubad is in a language or in a reflexive language, meaning that the animal worked. And in this case, in order to be kosher, kshera, it has to be that the animal did not work. Mikomako, even if it doesn't on its own volition. Because again, had the Torah been interested in the fact that you as a human being work and activate the animal, it should have said asher lo avad ba, describing his. But lo ubad ba means that no work was done as a result of the animal. So the Gemara says, Ihachi, if that be the case, afilu reisha nami. In the reisha, if you recall, the animal does disha basically on its own initiative. So that should be enough to qualify under lo ubad ba, therefore disqualify the animal. And here the Gemara says that we have to understand, there's a gzeira shava that equates egla rufa with para aduma. And we're going to have to learn a Mishnah in Parah Aduma, in the second parak of Parah Aduma. And the distinction that the Mishnah is going to make in Parah Aduma is going to help us understand Eglah Rufa. There are two cases that are addressed in the Mishnah in Parah Aduma. There's a Reisha and a Seifa. And let's go through the Pasuk in Parah Aduma. This is, of course, in Parshas Chukas. And there the Torah says, V'ichu elecha Parah Aduma tmima, asher ein bomum, asher lo ola oleha ol. Ola oleha ol means that something climbs on top of the animal, and the animal has some sort of a connection to that thing. So what are the two cases in the Braisa? In the Mishnah, excuse me. One case is where an animal from a different species climbs on top of the parah. The other case, the seifa, is where a male of the same species climbs on top of the animal. And the difference is going to be the following, that if it's a male, let's say a bull, for example, then that's what's called breeding, right? So you have vested interests and you gain a tremendous amount by this relationship of breeding between the zohar and the geva. But in the reisha, ol olel ol, this is a case Rashi says, of. Ol olel of. And what does that mean? Beparah duma koi, sheparach v'noch al gaba. The oaf lands on top of the parah. And Rashi says the following, that on the one hand, in a certain sense, there's an animal, the parah here is carrying the oaf, but on the other hand, the owner of the animal could not care less, meaning he gets no benefit from it. So in this case where the oaf lands on the back of the parah, kshera, the parah remains kshera. But ol olel zachar psula. Why? Because in this case, he gains something, he benefits. Okay. So now the Gemara tries to understand the difference between the reisha and the seifa, my taima. In other words, why is it that in the case of Oaf, the animal remains kshera? And why not say, well, the animal is carrying this bird on top of its back? So Omer Av Papa. Okay. Now this Omer Av Papa appears in a number of places in Shas. If we have Bava Metzia, we'll try to see if we can find it there. But here in Pesachim, he's analyzing the Pasuk in Eglah Rufa. And he says the following. There's what's called a Kri and a Ksiv. Maybe you've heard of Machlokas in many places in Shas called Yesh Emla Mesores, Yesh Emla Mikra. What is Ki? Do we interpret and derive Halakas based on the way it was meant to read it, which is a tradition, or the way it's written in the Torah? And here, in the parasha of Eglah Rufa, where it says Asher lo ubad ba, we actually have a head-on collision between the Kri and the Ksiv. Omar Av Papa, Iksiv Avad Vikarinen Be Avad, if the Kri was the same as the Ksiv, meaning that the word Avad without a Vav indicates that the animal did work on its own. I'm sorry, just one second. Let me just get this right. Oh, Avad, I'm sorry. Right, there's Avad without a Vav and there's Ubad with a Vav. So the Ksiv is Avad. Avad means he worked the animal. So I stand correct. Means he worked the animal. So Asher lo Avad ba means it's only Kshera because he didn't work the animal. Had he worked the animal, which is called in the Lashon Rav Papa Adi Ovid Ba Ihu, as he does the malacha with the animal, then based on the ksiv, because the ksiv is without a vav, we would say that the egla only becomes psula because he worked the animal. Okay. That's as far as the ksiv is concerned. Adi Ovid Be'iu. Oh. But iksiv ubad, if the Torah would have said ubad, which is in the passive form, karinen bei ashalo ubad ba, which would mean afilu mimela, even if the animal did malacha on its own volition, on its own initiative, nami would also be possible. So we have two polar extremes here. One polar extreme is called ashalo avad ba, and if we read it as it's written, ashalo avad ba, it means only in a case where he does the work with the animal. If the animal does the work on its own, there's no psul. On the other hand, if we look at the kri and we read it as ubad, then ubad means even if the animal did the work on its own. Oh, now we're going to see the contradiction between the kri and the ksiv.
Forgive me, sir.
Because the animal worked. Once the animal works, the Torah says it's not a fresh animal, so to speak. Oh, now what is the deal here? Hashta. Now let's take a look at the ksiv and the kri. The ksiv, it says in the pasuk avad. Right? That's how it says in the pasuk, asher lo avad ba, which means only if he worked the animal. Avad is a description of the action of the owner of the animal. But karinen be, but with the kriya is asher lo ubad ba, which means that the psul is even ubad, even if the animal worked on its own. So how do we reconcile this? So in other words, the machlokes between yeshem lamikra, yeshem lamesoris only applies if there's a contradiction that cannot be reconciled. But the best way of going, if all things are ideal, is to try to reconcile the kri and the ksiv. And that's what Rav Pop is going to try to accomplish. He's going to read it like this. Ubad dumyo de avad. Meaning, even though the animal ubad did the work on its own, it became psula. But only if it's dumyo de avad. Because again, even though we're reading it as ubad, but it's written as avad, without the vav. So we have to be loyal to the ksiv as well. Ma avad, de nichole af ubad de nichole. We're going to come up with a compromise, a middle of the road, a golden mean between these two extremes. It's going to be the animal working on its own, which is called ubad, and that's going to reflect the kri, but at the same time it's got to be an ubad that's similar to avad. And what makes it similar to avad? That's called nichole. In other words, the person is very happy, he benefits from the work of the animal. So here are the two cases now in the Mishnah in Para. The first, and as I said before, there's a gzeira shavah between Para Aduma and Egla Rufa. In the first case of Para Aduma, it was olol of, and the owner of the par gets no benefit whatsoever by the animal carrying the oaf on its back. But in the sefer, in the case of where the zachar climbs onto the par aduma, now here, even though again it's asher lo ubad, it's ubad, but it's dumya de avad. It's as if he himself would have put the male on top of the female because he gets vlados from this, right? He's very happy. Now, if we apply this to the case of Egla Rufa, then we have the following distinction. We have the first case where he's not interested in Disha at all. He gets no benefit from the Disha. He's interested in feeding the animal, and that's it. That's where the story begins and ends. In such a case, it's Kshera, because then it's Ubad without the Dumya de Avad, because there's no element of nichole. But in the case in the sefer where it's bishvil shetinak vitidosh, so he gets now a benefit from the disha, and therefore becomes dumya de avad. Why? Because it's nichole. And if that be the case, there's no contradiction here to Abaye. If we would use classic universal criteria, then in the case where the animal, Where the animal does disha and the owner of the animal is happy about the disha, he benefits from the disha, since he had to take the animal into that situation in order to feed the animal, so that the mother could nurse the animal. Therefore, that's called lo efshar. And even though he has kavana and certainly nichale, nevertheless, it would not be considered as if he was working the animal. So when the animal did the disha, that's not considered asher avad bo. And why is it asher avad bo? Because he gets no benefit from the disha. But in the seifa, that's a different case. That's a case where he benefits from the disha. And again, even though it's lo avad bo, like for example in Isuri Hano, you need avad bo, meaning you need to actively pursue the Hano. And in the case of lo efshar, where he has to get from point X to point Z, that's not considered asher avad bo. But in the case of paraduma and egla rufa, the Torah says ubad. That's the kri of the pasuk, even though it says avad in the Torah, but we read it as ubad to tell you that even if the animal operated on its own initiative, as long as you get benefit from it, that's considered dumya le'avad. And if we had time, we would go through the Gemara Bava Metzia, and I'll show you something very similar in Bava Metzia, the parak called Eilu Metzias, where the Gemara talks about Yer Shalom Midas in the case of what's called Machshirin. Machshirin means if you have a vegetable or fruit and it gets wet with one of the seven mashkim, let's say water is one of the seven mashkim, then once it gets wet, now if a sheretz falls on it, it's mekabel tuma, that's called a machshir. And the Gemara wants to know what happens in a case where, let's say, he puts his fruits up on the roof, and there's the morning dew, and therefore it gets wet as a result of the morning dew. And the Gemara wants to say that he doesn't even know about it. So if he doesn't know about it, that's not called makshir. Makshir means he has to be aware of the fact that it was placed into water. And there too, the Gemara says that there's a stira between the kri and the ksiv and the pasuk. And we reconcile it by saying I'm trying to remember the pasuk. I don't have a Gemara Bava Metzia in front of me, but the Gemara says also nichale over there. Do we have a Gemara Bava Metzia? Maybe by chance. We should always have a small shas. You know those little 6-volume shas, which I donated here to the yeshiva, so I have a right to bring it in here. It's my donation.
A daf.
Oh, ask me a daf. I haven't seen it since I was in fourth grade. No, I'm just kidding. But that's what they taught us in fourth grade. To imagine they expected us to understand the sugya of Yeshalom Midas. You know what? I'll take a minute and just get myself a Gemara. Don't go away. Don't give up on me. Okay. So you didn't give up on me?
No.
Alright, let me just show you this Gemara here. Oh yeah, now I remember the pasuk. Ki yitein mayim, and it says ki yutan mayim. Ki yitein dumya de ki yutan. Let's see if I can find it here. Oh, here it is. Tzonachav beis amin aleph. Toshma. Odenu tal aleinam. So the water fell on the fruits, and it's still wet. And the question is, did he soak the fruits in water? In fact, he didn't soak the fruits in water because the tal fell on them. So why is it called makshirin? So the Gemara says v'sama, because when he finds out that the fruits are wet, he's happy. Let's say the dew cleans off the fruit, whatever it might be. So I raise it ki b'chiyutan. Right, the pasuk says in Vayikra Yud Aleph, v'chiyutan mayim al zera, v'nofal, etc., v'nivlasam, and avela falls on it, tomei hulachem became tomei. Then it says, nagvu, if they get dry, afal pisha somach, Eino v'chiyuta. Time of my lav mishum delo. I'm reading. Came in the glory mils the hashda nichale meikaranami nichale. So let's say by the time he finds out about it, it was dry already. But it doesn't matter if you hold yeshalom midas haviyevus, which is the sheet of Rava. Then we should have said that now that it's nichole, when he finds out about it, that it should be a hechsher. So then the Gemara goes through the entire kriyin ksiv again, and he says the following. He says shani hasa d'ksiv ki yitain ad she yitain, meaning he has to actively place it in water. Oh, kidra papa. Rapapa Rami Ksiv ki yitain, but it says the kri is ki yutain. In other words, underneath the yud there's not a chirik but a kubus, according to the kri. Okay, so how do you reconcile that? Is that he got it wet or it got wet on its own and the tal came from Shamayim? Is Ketzai. Be'ina ki yutain dum yud ki yitain. You see this Rapapa l'shitasa, that we try to find the middle of the road and the compromise between ki yitain and ki yutain. Ma yitain l'das, af yutain nami l'das. In other words, as long as he gets benefit from it and he's very happy with the situation, that's enough. So again, we're not learning Bava Metzia now, but that's a sugya that we'd have to see over there in Bava Metzia. Toshma. Now here's an interesting discussion. What happens when you find a talis and you are now chayv the mitzvah Shavas Aveda? Now the mitzvah Shavas Aveda has two parts to it. One is called shmirah, which means you have to protect the object. So let's say you find an animal, make sure you lock it up that it doesn't roam. And of course the second part, which is the punchline, is that you return the object when you identify its owner. Now in the case of a talis, in order to do shmira on a talis, what you have to do is you have to air out the talis, because if you don't air it out, it gets spoiled. Now, sometimes you can accomplish two goals at the same time, which is always that discussion about lo efshar v'kamachavim. What you could do is you can air out the talis in a way that you benefit from it, you meaning the motze, the person who finds the aveda. So the Raisa says the following. So you found this talis, this beggar, and now you're watching it in order to return it. It says lo yishtechena, he shouldn't stretch it out lo al gabi mito v'lo al gabi mogod litzarko. In other words, he shouldn't use it in a way that he benefits from it. You know, sometimes if you have a beautiful garment that's made of, let's say, I'm just dramatizing, made of beautiful colors, you know, it's something that you want to display. And as a result of displaying it, you know, people think, wow, look what a beautiful garment he has. Like, becomes like an expensive piece of art that people like to display. So if he does it with Sarko, so in terms of Hilcha Shmira, that's called Sholeach Yad B'Pikadon. That's a kind of exela when you take a lost object which you're supposed to be guarding on behalf of its owner, instead you use it for your own purposes. That's an act of exela. Avol Shotcha L'Tzarka. But however, if the action of Yishtachena is when he stretches it out is for the benefit of the talis, that it shouldn't get spoiled, shouldn't get, we call it Yiddish fashimelt, if you're familiar with that phrase. So he says, then that's okay. I will shotcha litzarka. Now, what can he kill two birds with one stone? Al gabi mito v'al gabi mogot. Okay, that's it. Nizdami lo orchim. Now he has people coming into his house and he'd like to display this beautiful beged. Lo yishtachena lo al gavi mitav lo al gavi mogud bein litzarko bein litzarko. In other words, even though he wants to accomplish two goals, and at the same time that it is beneficial for the beged, and therefore it's within the purview of the shmira, but nevertheless he also has another purpose, that he wants to benefit from it because he wants to show off this beautiful garment in front of the Archim, in front of the guests. And you and I would have said that this depends upon Abaye and Rava, because if you go with Abaye's approach, then this act of Yishtachena is not an act of Gzela, because it's an act of Shmira. So it's Lo Efshar, meaning he had no choice but to stretch out and air out this talis. And in so doing, the owner of the talis, hopefully will identify him, is benefiting from it, because the talis now will not get fashimled. So we should say now that even if he has kavana to benefit from it, that's not called gzela, because the action that he's doing is meaningful and beneficial for its owner. And if that be the case, that's called lo efshar. So even in the case that he has kavana to benefit from this yishtachena by showing it off to the archim, nevertheless, it should be mutter because it's a case of lo efshar. And what does the Braisa say? The Braisa says, lo yishtachena lo al gabi mita v'lo al gabi mogar bein litzarko bein litzarko. Now, it's even though he has a double, how should I say, a double purpose here, an overlap between litzarko and litzarko, but since he has an element of litzarko by doing this action, then he's not allowed to do it. Right, this is considered lo chaser in the hava meaning of the Gemara. The Gemara thinks that the owner of the talis only benefits from it; he doesn't lose anything by it. Again, the Gemara is going to change its mind, but right now that's what the Gemara thinks. So again, where's the isik zela here? Why is this called shlichus yad v'pikadom? Why is it so? It's a case of lo efshar. In other words, he needs to do this shatcha litzarka for the benefit of the talis. And this is a kash on Abaye. Where it says, no, shani hasam, you can't prove anything from that brisa of the talis. Why? Because this is not something that the owner of the talis would be happy with. It's not something that is achieving the goal and protecting the possession of the owner. Why? So I can understand the second answer, the Gemara. The first answer I'm not too sure about. And that's called Eina Bisha. Notice, whenever you expose something to the public eye, because you want to show off its value and its beauty, so you expose that to Eina Bisha. Now, I always thought that Eina Bisha had something to do with jealousy, in which case that, you know, you'll maybe lose something because of Eina Bisha. But here it seems that the Eina Bisha, if I can use the word chal, is chal on the heft itself. Notice when a person looks at something that belongs to someone and he's jealous and he puts a whammy on it, an ayin hara, whether he does it consciously or subconsciously, so the Gemara is saying that's going to have an impact on that object that he's looking at. So the Archim are coming in, they're looking at this talis, and then is spoiled from the beautiful talis. And that creates an Eina Bisha. And the Eina Bisha is chal on the talis itself. Do you follow? It's because they might be misunderstanding that this talis belongs to the finder. It doesn't belong to the finder, it belongs to the loser. But since they identify with the finder and they have jealousy of the finder, then I thought, again before I saw this Gemara, that jealousy might cause some sort of deficit to the person who they're jealous of, in this case the finder. But no, the Gemara is saying something different, that the Eina Bisha is on the talis itself. They're jealous of such a beautiful talis. Gee, I wish I had such a beautiful talis. You know, in our contemporary life we talk about a beautiful automobile. You know, who would bother with the talis? So you walk down the streets of Yerushalayim or any city in Israel and you see these unbelievably beautiful automobiles, and you know that it would take you'd have to sell your house in order to buy such an automobile, because the taxes here in this country are so enormous. And how does he afford it? You know, in the old days when I was a kid, they used to say, if he's driving around with a Volvo, you know, he's a kablan. Which is a nice way of saying that he's a swindler. But anyway, the Volvos, those are the Swedish Volvos. But today, I mean, you see, you know, Yankel Beryl, everybody on the streets here in this neighborhood I see is driving around this gigantic tender. And Berzon is driving around in this Alta French car from 25 years ago that every Mutter Gedorish have to take it in to fix. And that's why I come to Shia late. Yeah, I only do it because of humility. I really have the funds to buy these beautiful cars, right? But the point is that it's very shy today to have Eina Bisha on someone's automobile. And that would be a problem of putting a whammy on the automobile. You know, the Gemara at the beginning of Bava Basra goes wild about this Eina Bisha. The Gemara says that if you would stand on a short, a pedestal, and you would be able to see into his field, then you could put an Ein Bish on his field. That's called Hezek Re'ir. And because of that, I have to chip in, if I'm your neighbor, in building a wall between my fence, a fence between a fence he can't see through, between my field and your field, so that you won't damage me and I won't damage you. And it's all that Ein Bish. But the other explanation, I think, is a little bit more sensible, or shall we say, in our, you know, a little more intuitive. He says, Ibishum Ganve. Why? Because once people start coming into your house, you know, you give them a royal tour of the house, and they see this beautiful laid out talis here, somebody might actually steal it. That's not good shmira. And as a Shomer Avedu, Yechayv in shmira. The Gemara Bava Metzi records two deos, Rav Yosef and Rava, as to what the level of Shmira of a Shomer Aveda is. And according to Rav Yosef, it's at the level of Shomer Sachar, which means that Yechai for Gneim of Aveda. This Gemara here would seem to reflect the Shita of Rav Yosef. Now, Tosis, in the second Tosis, asks a Gevaldige Kasha. I was afraid to call attention to this kasha because I have no clue what his answer is to this kasha. I don't want you to walk around not understanding the sugya. But the Gemara says that in the case of a zachar, if the male cow, the bull, goes on to the female, then you have benefit from that. Frektosis, the Yintomer, my psua, vadelo nichale. This is not nichale. Imagine what a paraduma costs. What's its value? Right? The Gemara tells us about Dov Ben Hesina. He wanted to wake up his father to get the key for the paraduma. This is a guy, right? His kibbutah. The paraduma, I don't know, they say somebody found one in Jersey. I don't know if you read about it. Anyway, yeah this is a mice of about half a year ago. I don't know, I hope they're taking good care of that para. But anyway, a red hayfair, right? I think there's a place here that you could eat steak here called red hayfair. So it's a rare kind of commodity. So let's say you had the following two choices. You could have the male animal breed together with this female animal, which is a paraduma. Okay, that's nice. You get a little vlad, a little shepsel, you know, a little calf. That's nice. But, you know, at what loss? You're going to have to give up on the value of a paraduma as a gigantic mallet. He says, Domel Yikarit. Bishvil Dover Muad? Just that you could breed the. You know, as if you had a paraduma that was born in your flock, the last thing you do is want to breed the paraduma. You want to sell the paraduma, not breed it, because once you breed it, it's worth a fraction, not even a factor. Yeshlomar, and here's where I get lost. The Im Nomar Kshera, if we're going to say that since it's Lo Nichle, it's Kshera, then Havi Nichle, that would make it into Nichle. I don't understand the words in Tosis. In the footnote here, he quotes a Tosis Shans that tries to explain Tosis. Maybe if I'm lucky by tomorrow, I'll have a Pshat. But let's just get to the point that I wanted to get to today, for today. Toshma. And again, if anyone has to leave, please do so. I'm going a little bit over time because we started late, and I just want to get to... Whenever you have to leave, please. Toshma. Here we have a Mishnah in Masechta Kelayim. So you have a beged that's made of Tzemeru Pishtan together. And you're not allowed to have Hanos Levisha by wearing this beged. So the Mishnah says that in the old days, when people would sell begadim, that was their gesheft, that was their parnasa. So very often they would wear the begin on top of their body in order to transport it from place to place. We used to read a child's book. Maybe you remember the name of the book with caps.
Caps.
Yeah. Is that what the name of the book was? Caps. Anybody? No, not Cat and Hat. It was a very cute book about someone who would sell caps. And
the red cap was on top.
Yeah, and he couldn't transport the cap, so he wore one cap on top of the other. In any event, now we have a problem, because if you want to sell this beggar that's made of linen and wool together, then you can sell it to a non-Jew, and there's no lefneiver because there's no Iser Kalayim by a non-Jew. It's not one of the seven mitzvahs for Noah. And you're not going to benefit from it. Why? Because you're not doing what's called Hanas Levisha. But now what happened is, in order to transport it from one place to the other, you're wearing it. Now in the summer months, it's just going to cause you to schwitz. That's not a good thing. It's not nichole. But in the case of the winter months, you're going to benefit from it because that extra beggar keeps you warm. and that's called anas levisha. But on the other hand, it's lo efshar. Why? Because that's the only way that you can transport the beggar. So it's a perfect paradigm case for a buy and rob. And what does the Mishnah say? Mochrik sus, and they're selling begodim that have kelayim in it. Mochrim kedarkon. They're allowed to wear the beged, even though it's got kelayim in it. Ubilvad, but on the condition shlo yiskavim beachama mipnei achama ubegeshamim mipnei agshamim. Now again, I'm not exactly sure in the chama in the hot summer. You know, the sun is beating down. I'm not exactly sure how that's going to. Gives you shade. Maybe he's holding it on top of his head. I don't know exactly. Maybe one of those footnotes will tell you. But then he says the following. This is, I understand a lot better. That during the rainy season, when he wants to protect himself from the rain, so he gains a lot by wearing these begadim. And that you're not allowed to do. Again, even though it's going to be a case of lo efshar, but it's a case of lo efshar v'kama chave. Vatsnuim, oh, these are the prushim. They are very machmir in every Easter, and they want to, you know, instead of relying on any sort of kula, is they don't even want to wear the beggar that has shatness in it, even in a case where it's technically mutter, it's allowed, because it's not adding anything to him, right? And he has no kavana to warm his body up. But nevertheless, they don't want to wear a beged sheyesh bo shatnis. These are called the prusha, or the tznuin. Is mafshilin lachoreim b'makel. Instead of wearing the beged, they're going to attach it to a pole, and that's how they're going to transport it from one place to the other. In any event, leaving out the tznuin for a minute, let's go back to Ikar HaDin. We said that if he intends to have a benefit from this beggar that he's wearing, then he's not allowed to wear the beggar. So the Gemara asks, "Vahacha di efshar lemevad kitznuim." So this, I thought this was going to be a kasha on abaye, because why should this be prohibited? It's lo efshar. So the answer is no. It's Efsho. How do I know it's Efsho? That's why the Gemara quoted the Sefer of the Brisa of the Tznuim, that the Tznuim were able to carry the Beged on a pole, on the end of a pole. So since it's Efsho Lemevet Kitznuim, if that be the case, then what are you telling me? That Meikar HaDin, as long, the Brisa says, as long as he doesn't have Kavana, I said Brisa, but I mean a mission, I'm sorry. As long as he doesn't have Kavana to enjoy the Hanas Levisha, then it's Mutter. But why should it be Mutter? It's the case of Efshar. Now, at this point, we're going to assume that this is a kash on Rava, because if you remember, Rava says once it's Efshar, then it's automatically also, even according to Rav Shimon. Rav Shimon was the one who said Dovashen Miskavin is Mutter, but that's only, says Rava, if it's Lo Efshar. But if it's Efshar, then that's a joke. What are you telling me? You're not Miskavin. So why didn't you do it another way? The very fact that you chose to do it this way, to walk down this path, that itself indicates that you have Kavana. So the Gemara therefore says, Kilo Machavin Shari, meaning that this Bryce apparently reflects the Shita of Rabbi Shimon, who says Dovashen Miskavin is Mutter. And since he doesn't have kavana to enjoy the benefit of the levisha, therefore it's mutter. Why should it be mutter? This is a case of efshar. And we said according to Rava that, okay, so this depends actually on the two lashonos. Remember, we had two different versions of the machlokas Abaye for Rava. According to the first version, Abaye disagrees, and he says the following. Nechleku Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Shimon on this particular case of lo efshar, I'm sorry, of efshar v'lo kamachavin, that's going to be a machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Shimon, meaning that Rabbi Yehuda could be matir. So this, just one second, what's the case? No, I'm sorry, it's efshar, let's just go over this one more time, it's efshar. It's Efshar v'kamachave. Oh, so if you remember, just one second. I'm sorry. It's Efshar v'lo kamachave. You generally want to be nice to me, so you don't want to correct me. But it's Efshav Aloka Machavi. Oh. So according to Abaye, that's going to be the subject of the machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Yehuda is going to say once it's Efshar, then it's Asur. And Rabbi Shimon is going to say, well, it's Lo Mechavin. If it's Lo Mechavin, then it's Mutter. So according to Abaye, this is very good because this Mishnah in Masechta Kalayim reflects the Shita of Rabbi Shimon. Oh, now we get to Rava. Rava was of the opinion that once it's Efshar, then automatically it's considered like miskaven. And even Rabbi Yehuda would agree that in this case, I'm sorry, even Rabbi Shimon would agree that in this case, I'm just testing you to make sure, right? That in this case, even Rabbi Shimon would agree that it's also. Why? Because Efshar makes a low miskaven into a miskaven. Is Tiuvta. Tiuvta lamanda misne lishna kamad rava, because in the lishna kamad of rava we said that Efshar is an automatic oser, even according to Rav Shimon, in the case of Loka Machavin, and Gemara blives Tiuvta. That's the final conclusion, is that this is going to be a contradiction to the Shita of Rava in the Lishna Kama, because the Shita of Rava in the Lishna Kama is that even Rav Shimon would agree that in the case of Efshar, Loka Machavin is Asur. So Mirz Hashem, we'll stop here. Mirz Hashem, tomorrow we're on the threshold of starting a major sugya, which is called Shvach Eitzim B'Pas. But before we get to that, I would like to make a review of what we did today and try to see if I can straighten out some of the corners. And I wish everyone a great day. And Shavua Tov. Thank you so much.